954-380-7283. Tell them Steve Kane sent you.
WWNA, Pompano Beach. AM 1470 with even more of what you're looking for. Tune in for The Steve Kane Show, Monday through Friday from 6 to 9 a.m. only on WNN. Invine Health, a leader in high-quality, pure, fresh nutritional supplements, is excited to announce the opening of its newest store in Delray Beach at 1534 South Federal Highway off Linton Boulevard in the Plaza at Del Rey. Visit today and take advantage of daily radio specials on condition-specific supplements. And don't forget to listen to pharmacist nutritionist Jerry Hickey, the host of Invite Radio, Monday through Friday at 1 p.m. right here on AM 1470 WNN, South Florida's all-new health and wealth network. AM 1470 WNN is now the Health and Wealth Network, featuring more of the information you're looking for. Join us for the best health programs every day. Then, in late afternoons and evenings, tune in for more information for your financial success. Only on AM 1470 WNN, South Florida's all-new Health and Wealth Network.
The opinions expressed on the following sponsored program are strictly those of its hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its staff, management, or sponsors.
This is the Holistic Lifestyles Radio Show, brought to you by Holistic Lifestyles Radio Incorporated. Join us every day on AM 1470 WNN, South Florida's Health and Wealth Network. For more information about the show and our sponsors, be sure to visit our website, HolisticLifestylesRadio.com. That's HolisticLifestylesRadio.com. You can also find us on our Twitter podcast, Facebook, and blogtalkradio.com. Now, today's program.
All right, welcome to today's show, Holistic Lifestyles Radio. I'm John Hollis. And, of course, we are the Health and Wealth Network here at 1470 AM, Beasley Broadcasting. And we want to take this time to, of course, welcome our listeners on all of the social media sites, and of course our local listeners right here on 1470 AM from North Miami Beach all the way up to Cape Canaveral. Welcome to the show, and welcome Blog Talk, Facebook, My Sober Scene, and InTheRooms.com, and all the rest of the folks that follow us online. 22 social media sites, you know, tuning in on a daily basis, and we thank you for that. Also want to take this time to announce the 12-Step Music Fest, which is coming up here pretty rapidly. And that'll be on November 4th through the 7th. We're also going to be doing the event down there live. We're going to be broadcasting from the event on the 4th, 5th, 6th. We will be broadcasting the 10 o'clock show, 10 p.m., the 2 o'clock in the afternoon show, and then Saturday from 3 until 6. So we're looking forward to being a part of that. We have a lot of events coming up. We got one in September live. We got two in October, one in November, and we're working on one for December. So we got some live events that are happening. Check them out on our website at HolisticLifestylesRadio.com, and you will definitely be able to catch a whole lot of information there. Our website is an RSS feed. You can join the feed. You can also join us on Holistic Lifestyles Radio fan page on Facebook and Rockers in Recovery and a lot of other places. You know, we deal with all types of information as a whole because holistic is a whole. So we deal with everything from medical issues to legal issues to recovery issues to all types of life issues. Life is life. We go through experiences day after day. And, you know, recently there's been a lot of information out there in regards to, hospitals or doctors or professional medical people that make mistakes. And it happens. You know, I don't think anybody intentionally goes out to cut off the wrong leg, but it happens from time to time. I know it sounds weird, but we see it in the news. At the same time, you have the fact that people are over-medicated for the wrong reason, and they're given too much anesthetic, and next thing you know, or anesthesia, and they're gone. And you know, there's all kinds of different things that can take place. And today's show is going to be dedicated to medical malpractice, and we're going to be speaking with a gentleman. His name is Robert Gluck. He's an attorney from Weston. And, of course, he also is a veteran in legal issues for 20-plus years, and he deals with a practice that has been around since 1998, And he is a gentleman that is one of the best litigators in the state of Florida when it comes to, you know, the personal injury aspect and medical malpractice and all of those issues that we're going to be dealing with today. So what we're going to do is we're going to bring Robert on right now, and we're going to talk with Robert in regards to medical malpractice. Robert, are you with us?
I am with you.
Great. You know, I want to ask you a couple of different things. First of all, so my listeners understand who you are, give us a little background. I understand that you went through the University of Miami Law. You graduated there. What were some of the things that you can tell us about your background prior to getting started in your own business?
Well, I was born and raised in South Florida, practicing law since 1989. I graduated from University of Miami Law School, and then I I graduated cum laude, which means I had to study a lot and graduate in the top 10% of my class. And I was on the Entertainment and Sports Law Review in law school, which I did absolutely nothing with, nothing related to entertainment and sports in my 21 years of practice. But since then, I worked for Janet Reno as a prosecutor in Miami and got some trial experience there. And then since 1991, I've been doing all types of personal injury, medical malpractice, product liability, all types of cases involving injuries and accidents to people. And and I've been in my own practice since 1998 doing that and been trying these cases since 1991.
So through the process, I'm sure you've gone through all types of understanding about large practices and how you as a client gets lost in the shuffle, and, you know, they bring a client on and then they're changing lawyers 15 times on them over the next, 4 years that their case is ongoing, because some cases run that long or even longer, correct?
They do, and, that was one of the things. I actually, at one point in my career, I worked as an intern for Bill McBride at a large law, one of the largest in Florida, Holland & Knight was the name of the firm, and I just didn't like seeing clients every time they got to attempted to reach a lawyer in the firm handling their case. It was always a different lawyer. Each time they called, a different lawyer. They shuffle associates around in these firms. They shuffle lawyers around. If you have a case that is in litigation, might take a little while to get finished. And every time you have a new lawyer, you never know, did the old lawyer tell the new lawyer all the things I just told him in my last phone conversation? How much detail did he give him? How much did he leave out? So I just made it a point that whenever I had the opportunity, which I've had for a while and I've continued to have now, is to handle my cases myself. Mm-hmm. I make sure things get done right. I do everything myself. It's me and three secretaries, no other lawyers in the office. I handle all my cases from the beginning to the end.
And you know, in the world today, that's it's unheard of, because in a lot of even the smaller firms like yourself, you know, a single attorney, if they're in litigation or if it looks like they're going to go to litigation and they can't, resolve the issue out of court, in a lot of cases they'll turn it over to somebody that litigates. Is that correct?
They do most of the many times, and the problem with that is you don't get to participate at the beginning in making the decision of who the lawyer is going to be that's going to actually try your case, because you're hiring a lawyer that's not going to be the lawyer that's going to be sitting next to you in front of a jury if the case doesn't settle. So what I do is I tell the clients at the beginning that if they decide to hire me, they're with me from the beginning until the end, whether it settles any point along the way or whether it goes to trial. And in fact, a great way to get a good settlement or a great settlement is to assume the case is going to trial and prepare the case as if it's going to go to trial. So they deal with me as their trial lawyer, and at some point along the way, many of the cases settle. But if they don't, you're not going to have a stranger sitting next to you at the time of trial.
And I think that should give comfort to somebody, because, again, it's unheard of. There's another, and I would say that probably 90% of the law firms out there don't do it the way that you're doing it. Would you agree with that?
I would, and most of the lawyers that are solo practitioners will refer out their litigation files almost exclusively, and I choose not to do that because that's the part of my practice I really enjoy. I'm a trial lawyer. I love going to trial on cases, and it helps all of my clients, because even for the clients whose cases ultimately are going to settle and not go to trial, the fact that their lawyer has a reputation among the insurance companies as being a lawyer that tries his cases is likely going to result in them having in that lawyer receiving more respect from the insurance companies, and will result in the insurance companies making a more reasonable offer to the other clients that that lawyer has. So I do hope that I have that reputation among the insurance companies as a lawyer that if he doesn't get a reasonable offer, he's not going to hesitate to file a lawsuit and go to trial on a case if he has to. And that's what you want your lawyer to do, as opposed to when they get a letter, when the insurance companies get a letter from any lawyers, whether it's a medical malpractice claim, an automobile claim, a premises claim of any kind, they automatically know this lawyer never tries his own cases. He never tries cases at all. He settles everything. That likely will not benefit the next client if the insurance company thinks that about their lawyer.
And you know, in this day and age, Robert, we have a lot of things that take place in the medical field that you probably wouldn't see or you wouldn't hear about if it wasn't for the explosion of media worldwide. But over the last, 10 or 15 years, you hear things now that you wouldn't necessarily hear 30 or 40 years ago. One of them being that, I'm going to give the big issues that you run into that you like are mouth droppers. Like, the guy gets he's in a hospital, they're getting ready to operate on him, and they're supposed to take off the left leg and they take off the right leg. And you wouldn't have heard about this necessarily 30 years ago because of the onset of media today and the way it works. You hear about it instantly. So you're shocked when you hear these things, but when you look at medical malpractice as, and that's like a big one, that's pretty obvious, but what are some of the examples you can give us of medical malpractice?
Sure. Well, first, it's important to know when you're dealing with a medical malpractice case or not, because a completely different set of rules apply when you're dealing with a medical malpractice case in Florida as opposed to just a regular case of negligence where you're alleging somebody did something wrong. When you're alleging somebody who is a medical provider did something wrong, then you are bound by a medical malpractice statute, which requires additional things that other cases don't. But to answer your question directly, the types of medical malpractice claims, it's not just for doctors. If you have a claim against anyone that is governed by the various statutes in Florida that deal with medical providers, such as these are all covered by the medical malpractice statute. Anything that's done wrong by a physician, by a nurse, by a x-ray technician or other technicians in a hospital setting, by psychologists, radiology technicians, x-ray technicians, and anyone else that's directly responsible for patient care. So you could have an x-ray technician that forgets to put a brake on a stretcher when he takes you to get your x-rays done, and then when you get up to go to the bathroom, the bed that you're on rolls out from underneath you because he forgot to put the brakes on. That's a person that's governed by a medical malpractice statute, and you would never think that that's a medical malpractice case. But so that's a strange one. But it's basically things where the doctor or the medical provider didn't anticipate a problem that arises during a procedure that they should have anticipated. That's a common one. Or they didn't perform a procedure properly at all. They didn't treat your condition the right way. They didn't give you the right medication. They waited too long. They didn't do the right diagnostic tests to discover your condition soon enough. You know, John, that happens when the doctor, you show your doctor something or you describe something and he blows it off, and then all of a sudden you find out a year later you've had cancer growing and he never did the right tests to find out.
That's a situation that can occur. You go into the doctor and you have all of those feelings and doctors at times, just kind of blow it off because they feel, they just don't need to go there with certain tests. So they are liable for that.
Like an internist. If you go to an internist because you're having stomach pain, and the doctor looks at you and he says, "Oh, it must have been indigestion," and tells you to take Pepto-Bismol and sends you home. That happens a lot. But maybe there were diagnostic tests that should have been done. And what if sometimes stomach pain comes from colitis. Sometimes it comes from a tumor. There are things that, if they go untreated, could develop into a fatal problem. And with women, a lot of times, especially women that have breast augmentations, it's hard for them to tell if they feel a lump, whether it's scar tissue, whether it's a whether it's a lump, what it is. And a lot of times, when a woman goes to an OBGYN, they end up having something missed for 6 months, for a year. And you can go back and see for how long was the doctor missing this. And I've seen cases where those turn into, you know, cancerous growths that spread to the lymph nodes, and by then it's too late a lot of times, and had the doctor, you know, done more to diagnose it earlier, especially if someone comes in and they tell you they have a history, their mother died of breast cancer, or if sisters with cancer, there's certain things that a doctor should be doing and shouldn't just be assuming it's scar tissue or ignoring a lump, and sometimes they do. That's just an example, and a lot of times that happens with men with prostate issues, and things get missed because doctors don't, you know, they don't want to appear as if they're gouging and running up bills. Sometimes now it goes the other way, and to keep the patient happy, they might wait.
Huh. Well, these are all, I mean, ongoing situations. Can you give us some examples of the types of situations that may give a rise to a medical malpractice case?
Sure. A dermatologist who ignores a mole that should be biopsied. Mm-hmm. Turns out to become a cancerous growth. A procedure, you go get a procedure and you're told it has no risk or no complications, and then you end up with a complication or occurring that wasn't disclosed ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes people are given the wrong medication,
okay,
making a condition worse. Sometimes it's the pharmacy that makes the mistake. So any mistakes involving medication are issues, wrong dosage, wrong medication. Sometimes it's as simple as a doctor doing a surgical procedure on you and perforating an artery or causing a hemorrhage during a procedure just because of a slip of the hand, and they make a mistake. A cardiologist who doesn't do a stress test on a patient, and later the patient dies and they find out there's blockage there that would have been discovered had a certain testing been done. Those are some examples of things that happen. And then there are a lot of things that people just get mad about, that doctors just don't do the right thing regarding. But the lawyers turn down these cases a lot because unless it results in physical harm that would not have been caused otherwise, there are very few lawyers that would even entertain a case. And I can't tell you how many times I tell people, yes, they did something wrong, but you weren't damaged by it. You weren't harmed by it. Yes, you could have had a fatal problem as a result of this, but it didn't happen. So a lot of times the claims are obvious situations where a doctor commits malpractice or a medical provider commits malpractice, but your damages aren't significant enough to make it worthwhile because the lawyer has to spend a lot of money to bring these cases forward.
So I guess what you're telling me is near misses don't count.
Well, it depends. You're sure, you know, it's just like in an auto case. You know, he could have killed me. If he killed you, it would have been a large claim. If he didn't kill you, it's not a large claim. Sometimes in a medical malpractice situation, things have changed.
Mm-hmm.
What's changed is many, many lawyers that used to do medical malpractice claims got much larger recoveries in the past because laws have limited recoveries in medical malpractice claims. There are caps on recovery for non-economic damages that never used to exist, where in the past, if a lawyer spent $75,000 or $100,000 in costs, that means paying for doctors to come to court and testify, paying for experts to review the records, paying for models and video exhibits to be prepared so that a jury could understand the case. Laying out all of that money and hoping to get a great recovery out of the case for the client and hoping to recover back the costs that they lay out, that becomes difficult to do now because you're capped in how much of a recovery you can get. If a jury really thinks something's egregious, that a facility or a provider did something really, really wrong, and they want to award a substantial amount of money and pain and suffering for that, there's a limit now that prevents them from the plaintiff getting a recovery for the substantial amount of non-economic damages and pain and suffering that they used to be able to recover in Florida. So many lawyers, unless your example at the beginning was about the person with the they removed the wrong leg. Well, that's an obvious one.
Mm-hmm.
But many cases aren't so clear cut, and many cases are difficult for the lawyer to justify spending a lot of money on, unless there's significant problems and unless there's enough damages that a jury's going to award enough to make it worthwhile. So you may have a person calling looking for a lawyer for a medical malpractice claim, and they might have to call 20 lawyers before they find one that's willing to take their case.
You know, and I guess that kind of goes into one of the questions that I had, which was how do you actually prove that a doctor or a medical care technician or provider departed from the standard of care that they're required to follow? That's kind of hard to do, isn't it?
Well, it is. It would be if I was the one that would have to be the evidence to prove it.
Mm-hmm.
But there's expert witnesses we have to use for that.
Okay.
What we do is, in Florida, we get medical providers that are in the same area of specialization as the one that we're accusing of doing something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And we get that independent expert, although they're not really independent, they're hired by me.
Mm-hmm.
But I would hire an expert in the same area to review the records and to give an opinion whether the actions of the medical provider that we're bringing our claim against followed or deviated from the standard of care that a reasonably prudent medical provider would have followed in this community. So you would ask a surgeon to look at what another surgeon did and said, is this how other surgeons would do what he did? And what you're really trying to find out is, was this just a bad result, which sometimes happens? Or was there a mistake made? Or did somebody do something that they shouldn't have done? Or did they fail to do something that they should have done? So it's purely an expert-driven area of the law where the lawyers have to rely on medical providers, and it's the typical battle of the experts sometimes where the defense will bring in experts to say that the doctor didn't do anything wrong, and the plaintiff will bring in experts to say, well, yeah, they deviated from the standard of care that a reasonably prudent doctor would have followed. And you can keep going. If it was a nurse, you'd get somebody to evaluate what a reasonably prudent nurse in our community would do. And sometimes it's different depending on where you are. If you're in a busy and emergency room setting, what would be reasonable is different than if you're in a different setting, in an urban area where it's much slower. And then economics become an issue. But in general, that's how you do it. You get the experts to help prove your case for you. Without the experts, you have no case. You can't even bring a medical malpractice claim in Florida without an expert giving an affidavit stating that, in their opinion, malpractice was committed.
Huh. And if you're just tuning in with us, you're riding down I-95 right now, or you're tuning in on one of the streamlines, we're talking with Robert Block, personal injury attorney. You can reach Robert by calling his offices at 877-GLUCK-LAW. That's G-L-U-C-K, law. And his staff is there to be able to take your phone calls and answer your questions. And you can also go to, of course, robertgluck.com. Is that correct?
That is. That is the new website with all the information anybody could possibly want to find to help them answer some basic questions, and then, of course, all the ways to contact me. By they could send me emails, or they could fax or call the office, and all my clients do get personal attention. I return all my calls, and I actually give all my clients that hire me my cell phone number so everyone can reach me when they need me.
Well, what we're going to do, Robert, is we're going to go to a break. When we come back from the break, of course, we're going to talk more about medical malpractice with Robert Block. And again, his number is 877-GLUCK-LAW. And, of course, the website, robertgluck.com. We'll be back right after this message.
My name is Robert Gluck. I am a practicing trial lawyer and have been specializing in helping people who have been injured in all types of accidents for the past 20 years. I handle cases throughout the state of Florida. Recently, the legislature in Tallahassee has changed certain laws, and insurance companies are now taking advantage of those changes, resulting in much lower offers on personal injury cases across the board. It is now necessary to file a lawsuit to get a fair settlement on these cases. Before you settle your case for less than what it's worth, let me review it over the phone or in person with you for free. If there is no recovery, there is no fee. Call now for your free consultation at 954-583-8999. That's 954-583-8999.
The hiring of an attorney is an important decision that should not be based solely upon advertising. Ask for free written information about qualifications and experience. Let me tell you about the Sound Pillow. Sound Pillow helps many people in early addiction recovery who suffer from stress, anxiety, fear, and long sleepless nights to get a comfortable night's sleep by providing a calming and soothing feeling for the mind's everyday distractions. Sound Pillow allows the mind to shut down, the body to relax, and the spirit to heal. Go online to soundpillow.com. That's soundpillow.com. And while you're there, check out the many endorsements from people and addiction treatment centers using the Sound Pillow. Don't lose another night's sleep. Call toll-free today, 877-846-6488. That's 877-846-6488. And let the healing begin. Go online to soundpillow.com. That's www.soundpillow.com.
My name is Nicole. I first tried Willard water when I had a sore throat. I'd hoped drinking tea made with Willard water would help soothe the pain. I didn't think my first cup would make a difference, but boy, was I wrong. The soreness was totally gone in no time. I love Willard water. Scientists all over the world have studied it. Longtime users swear by it. It's non-toxic, has no side effects, and it makes me feel better when I drink it. I use Willard water as part of my daily supplement routine. Willard water helps my body absorb more of the vitamins and nutrients I need for good health. I only have one body, and I want to do whatever I can to take care of it.
To learn more about the benefits of Willard water, call us at 888-379-4552 or visit our website at drwillard.com. That's drwillard.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration, and Willard water is not intended to treat, diagnose, cure, or prevent any diseases.
You are listening to the Holistic Lifestyles Radio Show, brought to you by Holistic Lifestyles Radio Incorporated. For more information about the show and our sponsors, be sure to visit our website, holisticlifestylesradio.com. That's holisticlifestylesradio.com. Now, back to today's show.
All right, welcome back to the show, Holistic Lifestyles Radio. I'm John Hollis, and of course, you're talking to me from... listening to me from South Florida. Beautiful Boca. The only thing that stands between me and a beach now, we moved to the new digs, is a building, and we're trying to figure out how we can take that down. Robert, is there any various laws that you can help us out with?
Well, yeah.
Man, just bring in the wrecking ball. You think they might have an issue with that?
Well, just a little bit.
You know, as I was sitting here at the break, you know, one of the things that came into my mind with this whole, especially here in South Florida, because you deal a lot with nursing homes and stuff like that. If a family member has been the victim of negligence in a nursing home or assisted living facility in Florida that has resulted in an injury or death, is this considered malpractice?
It is considered malpractice, and there's a whole separate statute in Florida that deals with nursing homes. And the reason they had to come up with a different statute for nursing homes was that the original medical malpractice statute is governed by Florida's wrongful death, is also governed by Florida's wrongful death laws that basically say that if a person dies, they're limited, or the estate is very limited in what they can recover for malpractice, because a lot of the damages in a malpractice claim would be for the person that was affected by the malpractice, for their future pain and suffering, future expenses, future lost wages, etc. The provisions in Florida law that end at death in terms of what the value of the case is made it so that in these nursing home cases, they knew that all the people that were the victims of malpractice were in their 80s and 90s, so they would just drag the cases out long enough until they died.
Wow.
And then once they died, the damages would be so little that many of the plaintiff's lawyers wouldn't pursue the claims.
Hmm.
So they had to create a new statute. And there's a Bill of Rights for the nursing homes. The Bill of Rights talks about things that the nursing home patient is entitled to. They're entitled to their dignity. They're entitled to their religious belief, they're entitled to be given the same dignities that we would expect. If you looked at the Nursing Home Patient Bill of Rights, you would wonder, well, why do they need to include this in a Bill of Rights? This is just the normal things that a human being would expect in terms of being taken care of. But they're there because if there's a violation of any of these things in the Nursing Home Bill of Rights, the plaintiff lawyer representing the nursing home patient is automatically entitled to a monetary recovery. It actually makes it easier for the plaintiff's lawyer, if the injury occurs in a nursing home, to pursue a claim for a violation of any of those enumerated rights in the Nursing Home Bill of Rights. And the typical and most common thing that happens in a nursing home is just ulcers from people being bedridden and not being moved.
That's the
bed sores, the decubitus ulcers. That's the biggest problem that I've seen people calling about, and some of them just have gotten to the point where they're so bad, and that's the beginning of the end for many of these patients. And then they go from the nursing home to the hospital up and back until they pass away, and then each one blames the other. But these patients now are being photographed as they enter facilities to document what their condition is as they come in, so that the new facility can't be blamed for a condition that exists from the old facility.
Hmm. The family, I mean, in this situation, especially with the elderly or an older, you know, adult that you're dealing with under your care, maybe your mom, your dad, your grandparents, whatever it may be, the family members have a hard time dealing with a lot of these legal aspects, because they don't really know what their rights are, what they aren't, because they don't really know what they're dealing with in some cases, especially in nursing homes.
That's true. And then it's compounded by the fact that they're also worried that if they pursue a claim or get a lawyer involved and their family member is still in the nursing home, how will that affect their care into the future?
Now, well, that's a pretty big fear, and it's a valid fear, wouldn't you agree?
It is. And many times the actions of the nursing home are so bad that the family member wouldn't want them to stay there anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But then we're limited, and many people are limited by Medicare.
Absolutely.
And the placement by and where are beds available. So if people are concerned, that is a valid concern. There are things that a lawyer can do without creating a problem for the care of the patient, in terms of sometimes just letting the nursing home know that there's a lawyer involved, and that sometimes will help, because the facility will make a conscious effort to make sure that patient gets the best care ongoing into the future. But some of these facilities are just disasters.
Well, and I was going to ask you that. I mean, you have your long-term care facilities today that maybe you have set aside the assets and the money, maybe you're paying monthly for long-term disability insurance and all of those things. When you get involved into that end of it and you start looking at these long-term facilities, the ones that you're paying higher dollars for, and you're paying for them out of pocket, and you're not expecting Social Security or Social Services to take care of that end of it, you're probably getting a lot better care, and you don't have these issues. Is that the case?
Some of the independent facilities may be better than the chains. There are these for-profit chains. And Consumer Reports did studies on that. They looked at a lot of these nursing homes, and in the opinion of Consumer Reports, some independent nonprofit facilities may be better than some of the for-profit chains, like some of the ones that are tied in with religious organizations.
Yeah.
But you really have to visit the home several times. You really have to check on the staff at different hours of the day, and see what's happening there. And a lot of this is difficult because down here, people have their parents in nursing homes here, then the kids are living up north and they're never here.
Mm-hmm.
But you really do need to pop in at dinner time and see, are they just putting the food in front of them and not feeding them if they're not eating on their own?
And this brings up the question, do you think in this particular situation, when it comes to the elderly, that when you're getting ready to be established into a long-term care facility or nursing home, would it be appropriate to always have a lawyer involved from the very beginning, when you start to get involved with your parents or your grandparents this way?
Now, yeah, and there are there's a whole area of law called elder law, and there are attorneys out there, and there are other reasons to get a lawyer involved. This isn't exactly the area that I would handle, but there are lawyers that will help you in determining what will help or hurt your ability to qualify for certain entitlements and government entitlements. If you have money, for example, that is in your own name because you're going to move, let's say you're going to move your mom from her house to a nursing home, and the house is sold, and the proceeds of the sale of the house get put into a bank account, and you know that your mom's never going to use that money because she's 87 years old and she doesn't even know what money is at this point. So instead of putting that money in her name, that property may need to be deeded to the kids so that the mother will still qualify for her public assistance, because if she truly doesn't have any other assets, that will make it so that she won't be entitled to or eligible to have Medicare cover her nursing home stay. So there are strategies that elder care attorneys might implement to help you with assets that are going to become an issue for qualifying for benefits. But in terms of checking the facilities and seeing whether the facility that you're actually going to be putting your family member in is one that's had problems in the past or not, sure, you can contact me, for example, and I could check and see how many times has that facility been involved in litigation. If it's in South Florida, for example, or any county, you can look and see how many times they've been a defendant in a lawsuit in that county. And there are other places that a lawyer can go and other databases that will tell us complaints against different facilities. So sure, some are better than others.
Okay. But that service is there. If somebody wanted to call you, you could check the
place. Sure, I would do that as a public service for anyone. If you called me and told me, you know, this is a facility we're thinking of putting our mother in, do you have any indication that this facility has been a defendant in cases? Now, sometimes they're a defendant and it's not a valid claim, so you have to take that into account. But you could rely on the number of claims. If one facility has an unusually large number of lawsuits brought against them compared to others, that might be certainly an indication that you can rely on.
Yeah, I guess there's a big difference between 1 in 10 years and 110 months.
Sure, and nothing's going to substitute for showing up there and seeing the actual hands-on workers and what they're doing on a day-to-day basis. And if they know that a family member is there on a regular basis, they're going to treat that patient a little bit better, or at least they're going to be more cautious in what they do with that patient when they know that there's somebody looking over their shoulder.
What do you believe in? And there's so many different variations of this. I just had a buddy of mine not too long ago pass away, and the doctor, it was kind of like an Anna Nicole Smith type situation where, you know, they were medicating him and they were giving him all kinds of different medications, but he had two different doctors and the two different doctors were all giving him the medication. And the next thing you know, he's in the hospital and he passes away from an overdose, basically. I mean, his liver shut down on him, his whole body, all his bodily functions shut down, and he died. So what is a medication error? I mean, what can you determine a medication error is and how to proceed on a case like that in medical malpractice?
Yeah, those are cases where they're all records-driven. If, for example, if you have two different providers in a facility prescribing the same medication and there's an overdose situation, there's a multitude of layers of healthcare providers within the system that should pick up on that. It should be picked up by the nursing staff. It should be picked up by the pharmacy. The pharmacist that's filling the scripts for a facility should be picking up on the fact if there, and there should be a computer system where there should be an alert if a patient, and the nurse that's actually bringing the medication to the patient should be realizing if there's multiple doses of the same medication being prescribed by different doctors. And sometimes it's not just that. And I grew up in drugstores, and my father owned a drugstore going back to the early 1960s on Miami Beach. And pharmacies make mistakes. A lot of times the doctors make mistakes that are fixed by the time the pharmacy ever sees it, because many times the doctor will write a dosage that doesn't make sense, and you're hoping that the pharmacist, who's also a professional, will catch that mistake and call the doctor's office and say, did you mean this? I think you meant that. And a lot of times that will cut it off at the pass. But each one of those providers bears liability if a real – and there are cases where mistakes are made to the extent that an allergic reaction occurs to the wrong medication being given. or if contraindications aren't picked up on. A lot of small pharmacies don't have the same computer sophistication that a Rite Aid or one of these big pharmacies will have. And if you get two medications that should not be prescribed to the same person that could have fatal consequences, that should be picked up. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes the patient doesn't tell one doctor what the other doctor is prescribing them, but you rely on the pharmacy to pick that up, who's filling all their scripts.
You know, it's like one hand not telling the other hand what's happening, but at the same time, everybody's held accountable from the doctor all the way down to the pharmacy.
Well, when you have a lawyer involved like me, the reason that everyone is held accountable and everyone wonders, why does, you know, something happens, why does the lawyer just sue everybody? It's simple. In Florida, percentages of fault are what determine liability. That means that if there are 10 different doctors that all had their hands on a patient, which ultimately died, a jury has to say, well, the first doctor the patient encountered was for this limited purpose, and maybe he should have done more, but he's only 5% responsible. But the next doctor is the one that really blew it. If he picked up on what was going on, this patient would have lived. He's 50% responsible, you know, and so on and so on. So you don't know what percentages are going to be given by the trier of fact. That means either the judge or the jury are going to listen to the facts, and they're going to decide which providers did what wrong and which ones were worse or contributed more towards the problem than the others. You may have the intake doctor in an emergency room that made a mistake, but that mistake was made much worse by a surgeon that went and did a procedure that he shouldn't have done or did it wrong. There may have been things that an initial emergency room doctor should have picked up but didn't. We haven't even touched the fact that many times multiple parties are sued because many of the people involved in these cases don't have insurance anymore. That becomes a big issue. Many providers are going bare, and they're telling their patients right when you check in. You could see it on the doctor's wall, right, and they're required to tell you if they don't carry any medical malpractice insurance.
Wow.
Many of them don't.
Wow. And that opens up a whole other can of worms. That's another show for us, Robert.
Sure. Yeah, insurance coverage and that. Yeah, and if you got to think twice. I have a great doctor, my cardiologist, and he's got to sign up on the wall. Do you want to go to him if he does something wrong and results in you having a catastrophic problem that causes millions and millions of dollars of future medical care, or he puts you in a coma, God forbid, because he does something wrong and you have no legal recourse against that person at all?
Let me ask you, what do you have to go through to prove a medical malpractice claim in Florida?
Okay, well, in Florida, you have to prove that somebody was negligent. And the way we define negligence in a medical malpractice situation is that a person would have to have deviated from that which a reasonably prudent practitioner in the same area within the community, what they would have done. In other words, if somebody would have done something more than what you did, or somebody wouldn't have done what you did, or somebody would have done it differently. And it's reasonable for you to have done it the way they did it, and you just didn't do it the way you should have. That's a simple way of explaining malpractice.
How quickly do you think you have to hire a lawyer, or how quickly do you have to file a lawsuit in this type of situation?
Well, hiring a lawyer should happen fairly quickly, or at least calling the lawyer to screen your case and figure out if it is a malpractice claim. It should happen fairly soon after you realize or think that something was done wrong that resulted in harm, because people disappear, records change. You know how many times we get medical records and we see that things have been altered, and we hire experts to prove that a lot of times. Where a case results in huge damages, it's when the records are ordered right away and somebody tries to alter or change the records because they know what's coming.
Wow.
So you want to have a lawyer gather all that information. If there were witnesses, if there are photographs to be taken, things that need to be preserved, it's important to get a lawyer involved. But you can contact a lawyer up until just before 2 years after the incident that gives rise to the malpractice occurred. You have to give the lawyer a few days to file an extension, but at the end of 2 years, your claim is over from the date that you knew or should have known the malpractice occurred to the date that you have to file a lawsuit if it's not resolved by then.
So that is the statute of limitations in Florida.
Yes, and people, unfortunately, will call a lawyer and say, 4 years ago this happened, and 8 years ago that happened, and that doesn't work anymore.
Okay.
It's too late. There has to be a line drawn somewhere.
Absolutely. What we're going to do, Robert, is go to a break, and when we come back, I've got some final questions for you and your information where they can contact you. We'll be back right after this message.
Let me tell you about the Sound Pillow. Sound Pillow helps many people in early addiction recovery who suffer from stress, anxiety, fear, and long sleepless nights to get a comfortable night's sleep by providing a calming and soothing feeling for the mind's everyday distractions. Sound Pillow allows the mind to shut down, the body to relax, and the spirit to heal. Go online to soundpillow.com. That's soundpillow.com. And while you're there, check out the many endorsements from people and addiction treatment centers using the Sound Pillow. Don't lose another night's sleep. Call toll-free today, 877-846-6488. That's 877-846-6488. And let the healing begin. Go online to soundpillow.com. That's www.soundpillow.com.
30 years ago, 60 Minutes traveled to South Dakota to meet Dr. John Willard and to examine his miraculous Willard Water. What they discovered was thousands of people all over the world were using Willard Water to better their health. As 60 Minutes found, the claims seem unbelievable, but the results are undeniable. Scientific studies show that Willard Water can help our bodies absorb more of the vitamins and nutrients we need for good health. They also show that Willard Water helps make cells stronger and more resistant to disease. Willard Water helps the body heal itself. And it does all this without the toxins found in over-the-counter medications. Willard Water is not a fad. It's been helping people for more than 40 years. Become one of the thousands of people who use Willard Water every day. To learn more about the benefits of Willard Water, call us at 888-379-4552 or visit our website at drwillard.com. That's drwillard.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration, and Willard Water is not intended to treat, diagnose, cure, or prevent any diseases.
My name is Robert Gluck. I am a practicing trial lawyer and have been specializing in helping people who have been injured in all types of accidents for the past 20 years. I handle cases throughout the state of Florida. Recently, the legislature in Tallahassee has changed certain laws, and insurance companies are now taking advantage of those changes, resulting in much lower offers on personal injury cases across the board. It is now necessary to file a lawsuit to get a fair settlement on these cases. Before you settle your case for less than what it's worth, let me review it over the phone or in person with you for free. If there is no recovery, there is no fee. Call now for your free consultation at 954-583-8999. That's 954-583-8999.
The hiring of an attorney is an important decision that should not be based solely upon advertising. Ask for free written information about qualifications and experience.
You are listening to the Holistic Lifestyles Radio Show, brought to you by Holistic Lifestyles Radio Incorporated. For more information about the show and our sponsors, be sure to visit our website, holisticlifestylesradio.com. That's holisticlifestylesradio.com. Now back to today's show.
All right, welcome back. And, of course, Robert Gluck is with us. And, of course, Robert Gluck is an attorney, personal injury attorney, and we're talking about medical malpractice. You can go to 877 on the phone, dial 877-GLUCK-LAW. Of course, it's 877-GLUCK-LAW. And you can also go to robertgluck.com and find out a whole lot of information. I mean, this website is packed, jammed full of information after information and reliable sources that you can really check into. And he does a lot of questions and answers on the site. And in this day and age, a lot of people would like to check out the sites before they make the calls. So it's definitely a very informative site. And you can become a part of his key program, too, which means that he'll send you, if you lose your keys, he'll send them back to you. He takes care of it for you. More on the website about that. Robert, if you get involved in a lawsuit like this, how long does it take to from start to finish to get the situation over with?
Well, you know what? I guess it's the luck of the draw. Depending upon which judge you get, even within the same county, the amount of time it takes to get in front of a jury can vary widely based on how efficient or inefficient a particular judge is with their calendar. The more efficient the judge is with their calendar, the quicker you can get your case to trial. Some judges, divisions, cases get rolled over and rolled over and rolled over, and then a year and a half goes by and you're still waiting to go to trial. And it really depends. I've had cases where I filed suit and within 4 months I'm already number one on the trial docket, ready to pick a jury.
Wow. Can people, like, at this point of their situation, afford to go through a long, costly battle in court? I mean, what's the financial aspect of this thing?
Well, the financial aspect is simple. If it was up to the injured party or the party's family, the victim's family, the one that was the victim of the malpractice, to have to lay out all of the money that it would take to bring one of these claims, it would never happen. You hire a lawyer, and if the lawyer feels confident enough in the claim, the lawyer is the one that's going to take all the financial risk for you. The lawyer will not get paid unless you get a recovery at the end, and all the money that the lawyer lays out for expert witnesses will not be recoverable from you. You won't have to pay that back in most cases.
Okay.
Well, with most lawyers. Most lawyers will do the entire case on a contingency fee, where if they lose the case, you don't have to pay them back for all the costs they've laid out, and you obviously don't owe them any fees if they didn't get you a recovery.
Okay.
So that is a real risk, and that is why lawyers are more selective about which cases they take, because the lawyer's going to have to lay out a lot of money on these cases.
Well, that brings up another question. What is the qualifications a good attorney should have?
Well, for a malpractice claim, the qualifications that a person should be looking for in hiring a lawyer, they should be looking for, obviously, a lawyer that's got experience in handling malpractice claims. You want to hire a lawyer that's gone to trial on malpractice claims. You can ask your lawyer, how many times have you picked a jury in a medical malpractice claim? How many of these cases have you settled? How many of these cases have you resolved? There are many lawyers that do many types of cases. They may do bankruptcy cases, they may do wills and criminal, and they may have done a malpractice case and done various other things. You would want to ask your lawyer what percentage of their practice is dedicated to handling the type of case that you're seeking to hire them for.
Mm-hmm.
And I would suggest that the more experience the lawyer has in the area that you're looking for, the better off you are.
Yeah, if he's been in court and he's gone to trial on, in 20 years, you know, 200 of them or 300 of them, that stands to a lot better than 10 in 20 years.
Yeah, in terms of the number of cases that a lawyer actually tries, you'd be surprised, though, at how many of these cases, even though the lawyer files a lawsuit, end up getting settled.
Okay.
Very close to the end.
Okay.
Sometimes they'll go to trial, but many of the – so you could look and see how many times a lawsuit's been filed, because many times a lawyer will get a better result just because they've actually filed the lawsuit and they've gone through the process of getting the case ready for trial.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go to mediation. A mediation is something that a judge orders in almost all of these cases where you're not required to settle the case, but you have to sit in a room with the other side and with a neutral third party that's usually a retired judge, and they try and get you to agree on a resolution of a claim. 85% of the cases that come into the system that are a lawsuit get settled at mediation. So you're only talking about the 15% of the cases that actually get filed that go to trial, and those are only a small percentage of the actual cases because many of them don't get that far. So if your lawyer has tried a substantial number of cases, you're at a major advantage because there aren't many of these cases going on within the same community all the time. So if you have a lawyer that's tried dozens of cases, that's what you're looking for, because they'll be respected by the insurance adjusters, and they likely will get you a better result.
Now, if a new client is going to meet with you, so that way you can evaluate the medical malpractice claim, what type of information do they need to bring you?
Well, the best thing for especially for a medical claim is that they have as many medical records as possible. Now, that might be impractical. They may just have a story to tell and not have any documents to support it, and so that's okay too. But what if they don't have documents and they haven't ordered records, and or it's too soon for them to reasonably have been expected to do that, the best thing for them to bring to the lawyer is a written chronology of everything that they believe happened that they feel constitutes malpractice, where it happened, who was there when it happened, what witnesses were there to it, whether records were created, the names of the facilities involved, the names of the nurses or the people in the facilities, photographs of any of the or any documentation in terms of actual physical evidence of any malpractice. If it's a prescription case, you'd save the bottles. If it's someone that's got a decubitus ulcer from a nursing home, you would take photographs to document it. Those are the things that are helpful. And then I have a doctor that I work with that I have helped me screen these cases. And I go over all the details with my doctor on staff. And then he helps me evaluate them and has follow-up questions of things that need to be learned before we can determine whether it's a viable case for us to take.
So as far as the consultation on something like this, what is there a charge for the consultation?
No, there's no charge at all. My time is your time. And if we end up evaluating the claim and get to the point where we feel that it's a claim worth pursuing, you would have the client would have the option of hiring me on a contingency fee basis, which means if there's no recovery, I don't get paid.
Yeah, I think a lot of the fear in a lot of people, Robert, is that they think it's going to cost them money, and that's why they never pick up the phone to call a lawyer.
Yeah, and the whole reason we have a contingency fee-based system for malpractice claims and for general personal injury claims as well is that we want to make the system available to everyone, because the things that are done wrong are not pursued in terms of a lawsuit, then people aren't motivated to make changes. If a particular facility has a dangerous entryway and people are falling and getting hurt all the time and nobody sues them because they don't want to spend the money to do it, they're never going to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
And money talks. When an insurance company tells their insured, hey, you've had three people bring a claim against you for the same thing. If you don't fix this, we're dropping you and we're not going to cover your losses anymore. That's what motivates people to fix things. If a hospital gets sued four times because the same doctor commits egregious errors, they're going to get rid of that doctor, and he's not going to be on their staff anymore.
Absolutely. You know something, Robert? We want to thank you for being on the show today. It's been a great hour, great wealth of information that you provided to our listeners on WNN 1470 AM, the Health and Wealth Network. And, of course, I want to thank you personally for sponsoring our show.
Thank you. And you know all your listeners can always reach me with any questions they have, even if we didn't talk about it today, any legal question at all.
877-GLUCK-LAW, G-L-U-C-K, Law, L-A-W. And, of course, Robert will personally talk with you and get you through the process. You can also go to his website at robertgluck.com and find information there. Become part of his key program. You'll love it. Robert, thanks again.
Thank you, John. Have a great day.
You too. We're out. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to the Holistic Lifestyles Radio Show. This program is sponsored by Holistic Lifestyles Radio Incorporated. Join us every day right here on AM 1470 WNN. You can also find us on our Twitter podcast, Facebook, and blogtalkradio.com. For more information about the show and our sponsors, be sure to visit our website, HolisticLifestylesRadio.com. That's HolisticLifestylesRadio.com. All broadcast rights to this program are the property of Holistic Lifestyles Radio Incorporated. Rebroadcast of any portion of this program without express written consent is prohibited. The opinions expressed on this sponsored program are strictly those of its hosts and callers and are not necessarily those of the station, staff, management, or sponsors. Thank you.
WWNN, Pompano Beach.
AM 1470, WNN, South Florida's all-new Health and Wealth Network, is now online. Check the program schedule and listen live. Go to WWNNradio.com. That's WWNNradio.com.
The summer is here, and that means higher electric bills for all of us. As part of our ongoing effort here on the Steve Kane Show to slash your energy costs, I want to tell you about the KISS Reflective Heat Shield. After I had the system installed in our home, about an hour later, the thermostat shut off, yet the house remained cool throughout the day without the AC going back on. Less AC, less energy consumed, lower...